do a little pilgrimage out here and enjoy the east end of Long Island and play this beautiful championship course. I think it's a championship course. It's a beautiful design, almost stretching 7,000 yards. And when the wind kicks up, it's as good as any. And Kevin Smith here, the head pro, is just a phenomenal guy, really generous man, and does everything first class. So if you hear some bells and whistles and cash registers and some little the natural rhythms and patterns of the pro shop action, well, we just want to make you feel like you're at the pro shop. That's what we're all about here. It's a golf show, it's a talk show about golf, so might as well create a little ambiance. Looking forward to talking to New York Times reporter Karen Kraus. She's going to be on the line. She is on the line. We're going to be with her in just 2 seconds. Just want to give a quick shout-out to Kelly Sean. Congratulate her. Local girl does good. Wins the Women's Met Open Championship. And coming in for a T4 was Danny Mullen, who was a guest on this show, this very show from Southwood Ho, a couple of weeks ago. So looks like she's in her quest to turn professional. She's on her way, considering I think only one professional in that field beat her, and that would be Kelly Sean. So really congratulations to both of them, really doing well. We're going to burn our first break here. When we're back, we'll be talking to New York Times reporter Karen Kraus. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
The Long Island Golf Association is a nonprofit organization of 81 private and public clubs. The LIGA conducts 15 championships annually and works closely with the Long Island Caddy Scholarship Fund. The scholarships are granted to young men and women who are employed at member clubs. For more information on how you can participate in a championship, or if you'd like to donate your time as a volunteer, please call the LIGA at 516-746-1015. That's 516-746-1015. 1015, or visit us at www.longislandgolf.org. Is your inspection due? Are you tired of listening to that noise your car is making? If you're looking for a reliable shop to service your car, try A1 Action Auto for all your car service needs. A1 Auto is a New York State certified shop, and owner Ed Terabeal has over 25 years of experience. A1 Action Auto is conveniently located off Sunrise Highway in West Islip, so pick up the phone and call A1 Action Auto at 631-321-4242. That's 631-321-4242.
All right, welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Pleased to be joined on the line by New York Times reporter Karen Kraus. Karen, how are you doing?
Very well. How about yourself?
Doing well. I want to first thank you so much for accommodating me here. I know you're over near the left coast there. You're a little behind us, and so it's quite early for you as you make your pilgrimage over to the Open Championship. I do greatly appreciate your efforts here this morning.
Oh, my pleasure. I'm really looking forward to next week. It should be a very interesting tournament.
Yeah, I think it should. It sets up to be a very a wonderful championship. But before we get to that, I wanted to talk a little bit about you, if you don't mind, and sort of talk about how how did you end up becoming a reporter, and how did you end up becoming pretty much the golf reporter? I mean, you're covering the PGA Tour for most weeks, and certainly for the big events. How did that all come about?
Well, I was an athlete growing up. I was a swimmer, and I swam through college. So I was always around athletes, and I love to write, so it seemed like a natural transition when I was done with college and my swimming career, such as it was, to write about athletes for a living, and very, very fortunate that I am still able to do that now. I tell everybody I've managed to get to my age without ever working a day because I love what I do so much. It doesn't really seem like work most days.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the ultimate combination when you get to get paid to do something that you really love to do.
Absolutely. That's what I tell young people when I speak at classes, that you have to find your passion, because if you find your passion, you'll never work a day in your life.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's hard for people, especially young kids, to sort of come to grips with, and because they have, I think their judgment certainly clouded by things that they think they want or think they need. and they sort of skip over some of the what passion really drives them, and so they wind up playing catch up maybe down the road.
It's interesting because I'll speak to classes, and inevitably, one of the first three questions is, how much do you make? And I always tell the person who asks that question, if that is the question you have for me, don't go into my business, my profession. Or if you do go into journalism, go into the broadcast side of it. Because
right.
if money is that important to you, this is probably not the job for you. You know, for me, it was just being able to tell people's stories and connect with the subjects and the readers, and that's kind of my driving force.
Sure. And you know, that's part of the, like, what I like to do about the show is, you know, telling stories, and whether in this case be, you know, your story, or if it's going to be down, you know, in a few minutes, maybe Jordan Speed's story, or whatever the case may be. But that's really what we're doing. But I want to know... if you remember, but you and I had met at the first Barclays, and you and I walked the first couple of holes because we were both following Phil Mickelson, and we walked together, and we were unpacking the phenomenon around why New Yorkers love Phil Mickelson. I don't know if you remember that because you've traveled quite a ways from then until now, and so. But yes, we walked the first three holes at Bethpage Black, and we were trying to get to the bottom of why New Yorkers love Phil Mickelson, and we were kind of picking that apart.
I do remember that in 2012, and
yes.
I think what we decided is, you know, New York is a city of risk takers, and
exactly.
Phil is the ultimate risk taker.
Yeah, he's like a regular guy, you know, and, you know, I know he gets a bad rap sometimes for seeming almost phony, but, yeah, I think he's unapologetic for his behavior or in terms of his strategy, if you will, and stuff like that, and so I think that's what people love about him.
Yeah, I think he also does seem approachable in a sport where more and more the players do not seem accessible.
Right. Well, I wanted to get back to that. So since you've really started to cover the PGA Tour on a regular basis, let's say, you know, what have you learned about the inner workings of the tour? What have you learned, you know, about yourself? You know, what have sort of been the growing pains, if you will, of covering a PGA Tour in an enterprise like the PGA Tour?
Well, the first thing I've learned is that the players are really terrific. With very few exceptions, they're thoughtful and very pleasant to deal with. They're all tortured souls because golf, you cannot perfect golf, and it's a very humbling sport for even the best players. They fail more than they succeed, and so, of course, that is very humbling. It's such a psychological game at the level in which they're playing. They all have the skills to be great. But what separates the people who win from the people who, you know, finish 10th, 20th, 30th, 100th on the money list is just that ability to channel their emotions, control their emotions under pressure, to stay focused, maintain their concentration, but really to control their emotions. So that's been the most interesting thing for me dealing with the golfers, because I come from a sport where swimming, having the sport that was closest to me, there was no event that lasted over 20 minutes. So to see these athletes going through a 4.5, 5, 5.5 hour round and having to control all the variables and their performance and their emotions has been really enlightening. And as for the golf itself, the thing I've been sort of surprised by and dismayed by is how the lack of inclusivity in the sport to this day, it really it sadly has retained its country club ways, if you will, and it's just very, very hard to break through that cliquish, elitist barrier, for lack of a better word. So that's the difficulty of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I totally agree. It is very, it is challenging. What have you learned about yourself and as you've covered this this enterprise, and has there been insight that you feel like you've learned?
Well, I've learned that I'm tougher than I maybe gave myself credit for, because I really have been in positions where I've been one of the few women. I've not been really readily accepted. I've actually last year was told I could not go into a locker room to interview Ernie Els when a couple male reporters had gone in before me. It was just a really awkward experience. The attendant told me when a PGA Tour official finally intervened and, you know, said, "You have to let her in." And as a preface to this, in golf locker rooms, they are not really changing anything other than their shoes. So
right,
it's not
sure.
Like I'm getting a look at anything that might be unseemly other than people's bunions, but
that might be unseemly enough.
Exactly, but the locker room attendant said, you know, "I'm not going to let a woman in this locker room to watch the players shower." And that kind of experience I've had on different levels, sometimes more subtle, has been really challenging, but I guess I have learned, you know, that I have thicker skin than I thought, and I can navigate those situations.
Yeah, is part of that your thick skin? Is part of that being just a competitor in general? Do you think you get it from that? You were an athlete, you're a competitor, you're not going to, you know, you're just looking to get a story, you're, it's not, I don't want to make it out to be, you're not going to be denied the story, but you know what I mean? Like, has that helped you?
That's very perceptive of you, Anthony, because I think that's my saving grace, is I don't want to let someone else win. I didn't want to let that locker room attendant win and beat me back or beat me down, and that is sort of the driving force for better and worse for me.
Sure.
Is I am very competitive, and now that I don't have a sport, I guess I channel it in my work, but I do feel like if you tell me I can't do something, I'm really going to try my hardest to prove you wrong, and that has helped me tremendously. That's probably been the thing that's kept me going at moments where it feels like a zero-sum game, you know?
Yeah, sure. No, I get it. I'm a little bit of the same way, quite frankly. So I understand, having been a competitor and an athlete. And yes, I understand exactly where you're coming from. You're a little surprised that people... I was a little surprised when I first started showing up at events that even just writers in general, for the most part, I didn't find them. There were a couple of little very nice people, but... It's a very dog-eat-dog world, isn't it?
It really is, and I have come to realize that a lot of it is not meanness or it's just
or
people
personal.
Either. Yeah, it's nothing personal. People are just really focused. You know, it is very competitive, so maybe it isn't as collaborative or as collegial as you would think, because the press room is just another competitive arena. It's a competitive subset of the larger competition that people are covering. So once you accept that and realize that really very little of what you experience is personal, it makes it a lot easier.
Sure. My guest is New York Times writer Karen Krause. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in 1 minute. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
Pete's Golf. Since 1979, Pete's Golf has been practicing the art of club fitting and has been selected as a top 100 club fitter by Golf Digest magazine. At Pete's Golf, we use the best technology available to create an exceptional fitting experience for every customer that walks into our store. Visit petesgolf.com. Call 516-248-6891. That's 516-248-6891. And get your next set of clubs fit for you.
It's here at last. Golf season. South Shore Golf specializes in golf club repair, re-gripping, and PGA golf instruction. They will not be undersold. They will match all local prices. For more information, call South Shore Golf, 631-563-2025, 631-563-2025, or check them out online at southshoregolf.net. Heading out east? How about a quick and easy stop for all your golf needs? Let South Shore Golf take your game to the next level.
All right, welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Thank you for joining me. Here I am at Montauk Downs, enjoying the east end of Long Island, calling in from the Pro Shop here. And on the line is New York Times reporter Karen Krause. Karen, let's shift subjects from you to an issue that we think that, or someone who's been making a lot of news, and just wanted to get your thoughts and your insights on the Donald Trump problem and the problem that golf has with him. Is this the beginning of the end for him, or do you think he's gonna stick around?
Not really sure. And while I don't condone Trump's remarks, I will say that generally speaking, the golf demographic is his target audience in terms of the people he is reaching out for their votes. So while Donald has been, you know, unfiltered in his views and to many people's chagrin and dismay, from what I can see being around this world week in and week out, he is not alone in his views. And so I see a certain hypocrisy in all of these golf organizations who have embraced him to this point, all of a sudden rejecting him because, from what I've seen, their houses aren't clean either. I have a story that's set to run Monday about one of the women who has been named one of the first female members of the Royal and Ancient Golf Club. They will all be trotted out at St. Andrews next week. And if you read that story, you will see that there is still sexism and racism in golf at its highest levels. So I just feel a little uncomfortable with a collective group rejecting Trump when I think at the dinner table they might have views that aren't that much different from his.
I think it's going to be interesting in the sense that, you know, each organization, what makes it difficult, I think, and to see it play out, is that as each organization, going from the RNA to the LPGA and everything in between, is involved with him on different levels and some in deeper than others. And so to see it play out, I just, you know, part of it is him being, yes, as you said correctly, unfiltered, and he's loud, and he's very in your face. He's really going to put people in a difficult situation. And I saw Natalie Gulbis was on TV not too long ago on maybe Morning Drive, and she was talking about how he has been so supportive of the LPGA, and Mike Wann has, you know, been the golden boy with the Midas touch to this point. He's really going to be put in a difficult situation here. It's just be interesting to see how each organization, even though they had the unified and collective, comment and rebuttal to his comments, each individual organization has a decision to make.
Well, with the LPGA, Donald Trump used to host their season finale and would actually house the women at Mar-a-Lago in Palm Beach, one of his, you know, many properties. so he has had a very deep relationship with the LPGA. And Natalie was one of the few golfers who would go on the record. I talked to Jim Herman, or reached out to Jim Herman, who has been sponsored by Trump and, in fact, wears Trump on his on a logo on his shirt, mm-hmm. and he didn't want to speak. There's Pat Perez, a player of Mexican-American descent, did not want to speak on the record about this. So it's a difficult situation, as you said. I think these players are afraid of speaking out because it's an owing situation for them. They either are going to risk censure by their tour, or they are going to criticize someone who, on some level, has been helpful to them. So I was really surprised to see Natalie come out as strongly as she did. All power to her for that. Phil Mickelson was asked at the Scottish Open about it, and he gave what I thought was the best answer, the most diplomatic, certainly, saying, well, it's a difficult situation because I respect Donald Trump and what he's done for the game of golf, but I think I speak for a lot of people in saying that we don't agree with what he said. So I guess that's probably the best answer anybody can give at this point.
Do you think that Donald Trump, when Phil Mickelson says what he's done for the game of golf, I mean, basically, yes, he's invested in some properties, as we know. He's taken advantage of a down market, and he's invested in properties. He wanted to be in the golf industry, and he, quite frankly, and everybody knew that, and from day one, he really wanted a major championship. But what is he really, I mean, when we break down what he's done for golf, other than maybe save a couple of clubs, other than, and maybe he's definitely done a lot for the LPGA, but in general, has he done so much for the game of golf that he gets carte blanche with this kind of behavior?
Well, you have to look at it from the PGA Tour's perspective, and this is what I'm talking about, the narrowness of their world. The Doral event might not exist if not for Trump.
Mm-hmm.
He took a course that was really had seen better days, and did a major renovation, which that event was slowly dying because nobody wanted to play the course. And so you look at that is now one of the top 10 events in terms of fields on the tour.
Right.
So when people in golf talk about what Trump has done for the game, that's their focus. They're looking at, well, he saved one of our tour events potentially.
Mm-hmm.
And he has put a lot of money into a sport at a time when a lot of other people were leaving the sport. Sponsors, courses closing. So again, this is the challenge for me in covering this sport. You're talking about very rich people and talking about the contributions that richer people have made to their sport.
Mm-hmm.
On a basic level, it's a fair question. Well, what has he really done for the game? But at the level that they're talking about, at the rarefied level of events and the money and such, he's done quite a bit. So it just depends on what your perspective is in terms of what is helping the game.
Sure.
And, you know, I don't dispute what Natalie said. He's been a huge champion of the women's game long before really a lot of people were taking interest or renewed interest in it. So he does deserve credit for that. So it's a tricky thing.
Sure.
Does Trump throwing his name and money behind women's golf encourage an 8, 9, 10, or 11-year-old girl to take up the game? I don't know. Maybe because she sees this tournament that is on TV only because Trump was throwing his money behind it, and that gets her interested. Well, then you could say, yeah, he did have a role in growing the game. It's all very complicated and complex.
Such is life, isn't it? It's very complicated, and like you said, I mean, you have someone like Natalie Goble speaking out and saying, and kudos to her, and you're right, but I'm sure that someone like Lisette Salas has a different story, as some sort of alarm is going off here at the Pro Shop, but hopefully that's not too distracting. But let's take a short break. We'll be back in 30 seconds to wrap things up. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
Pete's Golf. Since 1979, Pete's Golf has been practicing the art of club fitting and has been selected as a top 100 club fitter by Golf Digest magazine. At Pete's Golf, we use the best technology available to create an exceptional fitting experience for every customer that walks into our store. Visit petesgolf.com or call 516-248-6891. That's 516-248-6891 and get your next set of clubs fit for you.
All right, welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorsia, broadcasting from Montauk Downs on the east end of Long Island. And on the line is New York Times reporter Karen Krause. Karen, we only have about 3 minutes, so just real quick, what are you looking forward to the most of the Open Championship as you make your way out there later on today?
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing if Jordan Spieth can add the third leg of the calendar Grand Slam to his resume. I really like his chances, especially with Rory not being in the tournament. It was so telling to see Jordan play the first 2 days of the John Deere Classic. He comes back on Thursday, is very rusty, shoots a 71. People are saying, he's just going to miss the cut and be happy to miss the cut and jet over to Scotland and play the course over the weekend. But the people who say that do not know Jordan Spieth at all. He came back yesterday, shot a 64, put himself in contention. And that's the thing that impresses me most about him, is he is always around the top of the leaderboard. It's uncanny. He has had 16 starts this wraparound season and has 10 top 10 finishes, which is very hard to do. You certainly won't see that from Rory, who's much streakier. When he's good, he's very, very good. And when he's bad, he misses the cut. So
right.
That is just a very impressive stat in my mind. And to see him playing as well as he is heading into the Open makes me think, he could just contend in this third leg and make things really interesting.
Yeah, I agree. I think, personally, I think his loyalty is certainly admirable. He's very, being his first win and whatnot. But when you have a chance at history, I just think, I don't think that John Deere would have been upset if he had said, listen, guys, you know I'm going to play this event every year, but I have to just maybe skip this event.
Yeah, the tournament director said as much, but Claire Peterson. But I actually liked Jordan's retort to that. He said, I'm here trying to win a tournament, and if I can contend this week, how is that not good preparation for the British Open?
Yeah.
How is that hurting me if I'm getting my feels, as the new catchphrase in the game is, if I'm putting myself into that pressure situation,
sure,
why does it matter whether I'm doing it in Illinois or in Galen at the Scottish Open? So I find it very admirable that he's playing in this tournament that many other people forsake as soon as they reach any level of success. And I hope he's rewarded for his loyalty next week. I hope he doesn't go over there and have trouble acclimating to the time difference or have trouble acclimating to the link course and struggle and then give ammunition to all the people who were criticizing him for maintaining his loyalty to the John Deere Classic.
Absolutely. Well, we've been rewarded, and our listeners have been rewarded by having you on, and we have to, we're just about out of time, or we are out of time, and I just, again, thank you for getting up at the ungodly hour that you're at, and coming on the show, and thank you for your insights, and it's been a pleasure to have you on.
Oh, my pleasure. Anything for you and your listeners.
Thank you very much. Have All a great right, trip, bye-bye. And enjoy the open.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, that was Karen Krause, the New York Times reporter, reporting for the PGA. That's it, folks. We're out of here. Thanks to Montauk Downs and Kevin Smith, just tremendous for allowing me to be here. Enjoy the weekend, folks, and play some golf. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsese.